I'd like to give an acknowledgement first of two people that's really been a big help to our mom over the past few years. As she was getting into her 90s, a lot of the family started worrying about her. When we went to visit her, we'd open her fridge and sometime there was old moldy bread there and her milk that was expired or whatever. We'd say, "Well, aren't you concerned about this, Mama?" And she'd say, "Well, everything looks all right to me." But she was going almost blind and she was almost deaf. So when she opened her refrigerator, she couldn't see very well, but she insisted on living on her own. We kept talking to her about getting some type of assistance or somebody moving in with her or her moving in with one of the kids. And she wanted to live there. She wanted to live and die in her place. And so finally one day, Artie and I went and visited her and we opened her fridge one more time and we thought, wow, this is too dangerous. So we had a conference with us kids and we decided that her Bertie volunteered to take her because she was in the best situation, had the best house for it, and the best circumstances. So we had to figure out a way to do it. So what we told her was that Bertie was coming up and taking her down for a visit. And we decided to arrange a kidnapping for her. So Bertie comes up and we tell her she's going down for a visit. And so we pack her stuff up and ship her down with Bertie. And the next, as you know, about this time her memory was starting to go. So when she was down there, she couldn't remember for sure how long she'd been down there. And I'd call her up and say, "How you doing?" She says, "Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'll be hitching a ride back home soon. I don't know when." She just didn't realize she was down there she was out of her house for good. But I'm glad we did that because Bertie took really good care of her, and Bertie is into health food. You know, Bertie's health wasn't very good when she was younger, and so it kind of drove her to get into eating healthy. And now Stanley just hates that when she visits Bertie because Stanley hates health food. But it's probably good because she fed Mama all this health food, and while she was living with her, she was just in great shape. I was talking to her whenever I talked to her on the phone. She sounded like she was just really doing good, and she had a lot of company coming in. And so the time she spent with Bertie, she really enjoyed. And then we reached a point where Bertie had other things that she had to do, and so Elizabeth volunteered to take her. Now, the family was a little skeptical about this because Elizabeth lived way up in Kalispell, Montana, and made it very difficult for any of the family to go visit her. So we were a little skeptical, but we knew that Elizabeth really loved her mom, and so we decided to take advantage of Elizabeth's volunteering to do this. And Elizabeth did a great job with her. I mean, Mama was really happy to be there and content, and Elizabeth spent a lot of time with her. I remember Elizabeth told me that because her memory was going, she'd wake up in the morning and sometimes she wouldn't know where she was, and Elizabeth would come to her and explain where she was and her circumstances so she would get orientated every morning. And so that was really great. It was so much better that she lived with Alberta and Elizabeth rather than in a nursing home where she didn't get that type of personal attention. So I think I speak for the family when I show our appreciation to Bertie and Elizabeth for their caring, loving care, making her last couple years comfortable and filled with love and appreciation. I was thinking about the death of her mother, and I believe she is the last one of the Dewey brothers and their wives, who are the sons of John and Nellie Dewey. I think she's the last survivor of that group. I know all the sons are gone, and I believe all their wives are gone. So I think our mother is the very last survivor of this special group. And they were an interesting group of people, all of them. I really loved all my uncles, and they all had interesting wives also, and they were all very enterprising. There's something in the Dewey blood that is just always wants to do something different and innovative, change the world, make a million, invent something, just something in the Dewey system that way. And our mother was a very practical woman. She wasn't really like that. She just wanted to kind of live an ordinary life. And my dad wanted to live a very extraordinary life. He loved to party. He loved to drink. He loved to always be on the go, to be into something. And one of the things my mother wrote in her biography was that she was always very concerned about tomorrow. But she says, Ted had absolutely no concerns about tomorrow, no matter what was happening, no matter what their situation, no matter what bills they owed. He had absolutely no concern about tomorrow, but it about drove her crazy, that difference between the two. And us kids all remember that, I'm sure, as we were growing up, how he was always carefree, as if nothing was ever going to happen that was bad, and my mom was always concerned. And so that was kind of hard on her. And we went through, as Bertie explained, she went through all kinds of experiences, different living conditions, hardly ever had a normal house to live in. And so it made it an interesting life, at least. But reflecting on my mom, one of the things I wanted to say is I probably owe my life to her several times over. Let me give you just a couple examples. When I was a kid, I was about 5 years old, living just in between New Plymouth and Letha. And they had a bonfire, and it was out and just smoldering. And I was outside all alone, and I had the stick, and I was poking around in it. And it looked like it was completely out. But as I was poking around in it, just a flame came out of nowhere and caught my pants on fire. And it just come out of nowhere. I mean, it looked like it was completely dead, but it wasn't dead. And it caught my pants on fire, and I had these corduroy pants, and they really started burning fast. And I let out a scream. And thank God my mom was in the house, but she still heard me scream. Now, the fact that she was in the house and heard me scream and I was some distance from the house just shows that how attentive she was. But she came running out and grabbed me and rolled me around in the dirt and put out that fire. And if she hadn't reacted instantly, I'd probably been either scarred for life or not here. So that's one thing I really owed to her right there physically. Second time, I was, I think, about the first or second grade. We lived in Emmett. And I was down in a little basement. We didn't have a full basement, but we had a little basement section. And they kept all the just odds and ends there. And on this table was a paintbrush and some alcohol or turpentine. And I was down there with a book of matches lighting them, And I thought the paintbrush was in, I wasn't sure what it was in. I figured it was water or something. And I thought, I wonder if that stuff will burn. So I picked up the paintbrush and put the match to it, and boy, it really whisked up, you know. And it not only caught the paintbrush on fire, but the jar of paint thinner or whatever it was also caught on fire, and it jolted me so much that I hit it with my elbow and knocked it over on the floor. And there was just fire all over the place. And again, I yelled for my mom. And thank God she was in the house. And thank God she heard me. She came running down there and saw that fire all over everywhere. And what would most people do? Most people wouldn't know what to do. They'd just panic and let the house burn down. Well, there happened to be a big mattress nearby, and she took, grabbed this big mattress and threw it on that fire and just stomped it out with that mattress. Just put it all out. And I thought, well, I probably owed my life to her. If I'd been there alone, I might have burned down with the house. And at minimum, the house would have burned down for sure without my mom being there. But the funny thing was, it burnt my lips. I had big scabs on my lips, both my lips, for about 2 months. So I had a memory. Everybody kept asking me, what's the matter with your lips? And I thought, well, I started a fire in the house. And it's kind of embarrassing to explain what was the matter with my lips to everybody. But the third kind of life and death experience, kind of I brought to her rather than she brought, than anything else happened, was when I had the accident with my hand at the age of 13, I started making these rockets. And when I started making them, everybody in the neighborhood started making them. We had a great time. We made these, we kept trying to make more and more powerful ones all the time. We started making little bitty ones and then bigger ones. And we found the best thing to make them with, after a lot of experimentation, was the CO2 cartridges. We'd fill them full of match hits, because that was the only fuel we could buy in the stores. And we'd take like 25 bucks of paper match heads, cut them off and stuff them in this CO2 cartridge, put it on a wire, and put a fuse in it, and we'd light it, and boy, it would make a boom like you wouldn't believe. And the rocket would go so far up, we'd never see it again. I mean, it was just gone. We never did know where it went. But it made a sound about like, we figured about like 5 or 6 12-gauge shotguns going off at one time is what it sounded like. And really give us a charge doing that. And my mom kept coming to me saying, well, isn't this dangerous? I said, nah. He says, these paper matches, I mean, you can hit them with a hammer, they won't go off. You have to actually light them. She says, well, I don't know about that. I don't know whether I'll let you make these or not. I said, well, nothing to worry about. And then one day, it was the day after Christmas, December 26, 1958. And I was in on making them on this coal and wood range that the bishop was talking about. She had one back then, too. And we heated our house with it. It also heated our water. It had a pipe running through it that connected it to a water heater. And wasn't on at the time. When I was making, we were making the rocket on this in the kitchen. And a friend of mine came over named Clifford from next door, Clifford and Larry. Larry was with me. Number two rocket guy in the country. And his brother wanted to learn how to make them. So we instructed him, and he made about 99% of this rocket this night. But then he had basketball practice. He says, you ought to finish it off. And so he took off to the church to basketball practice, and so I grabbed it with my left hand and just put the last couple match heads in, and then it blew up in my hand. And as it blew up, what was interesting is we had a big tub there on one side of the stove. And I was putting it together on the other side of the tub. And my mom was just walking into the kitchen and walked behind the tub. When the rocket blew up in my hand, it split in two, and half of it went through the tub and almost through the other side. And on the other side of the tub was my mother. Now, if that tub hadn't been there and she'd have been hurt, I would have felt a lot worse than anything that happened to me personally. But the funny thing about that was where her hearing loss actually began. Because I said, I blew my hand off. She says, what? But anyway, but the funny thing was, it cleared out my ears. I must have had a lot of wax in my ears or something, because I could hear a lot better afterwards. You know, when I was in the hospital, I could actually hear my heart beating, and it was kind of weird. So her hearing got worse, and mine got better after the accident. But she, again, had the presence of mind. She grabbed a towel, wrapped it around my hand. We went to the neighbors and had the neighbors drive us to the hospital. And after that time, it was kind of funny that when people saw us together, they thought, is that problem inherited? We said, no, she lost hers with a knife, and I lost mine in an explosion. So it's just has nothing to do with family, you know. See, fortunately, my kids are all born with all their fingers. So, but when I think back about a lot of things I could tell about my mom, but one of the difficult times was right after our dad had one of his greatest business ventures. They built the sand plant, which is still in Emmett. They sold it and put everything they had into developing kitty litter. Our dad was actually the inventor of kitty litter. He was the first one in the country to ever try to market it. And they owned the sand plant, and he did a lot of experiments with sand, and he put together a formula that really worked. Well, they printed these boxes. They had a system that they don't even have today, and today you just buy the sack of kitty litter and put it where you want. But what he did is they also sold a sandbox. It was a cardboard sandbox, and it was just a square box on the shelf. You take it off the shelf, take it home, unfold the box, take the sack out, put the kitty litter in the box, and then when the kitty litter is all used up, you throw the box and the sand away and get a new one. And test marketing, everything showed, boy, this is really going to take off. Our family's going to be worth millions after this really goes. And it probably would be, except for one little glitch. Is they put all their money into this first big batch that was going to all the stores. And the printer did a blotchy job printing up the boxes. And they didn't have enough money to print new boxes. So they had to go under. And if it wasn't for that glitch, Bertie and I and Bill and all of us, Sandy and all of us, probably be rolling in money right now, and we'd probably be over some great big firm selling kitty litter to everybody in the country.
No, it was Purex. They put chlorine in the sand that made the print fade.
Oh, is that what happened? Oh, I thought it was a printer that did it. They put chlorine in the sand, somebody did, and that bleached out the box. Oh, okay. So that really ruined that enterprise. Now, that time, we thought we were on the road to Easy Street. My dad had a 1956 Golden Hawk. I don't know if you've ever seen a Golden Hawk, but it'd go like 160 miles an hour, you know. And when I was with him in it, I'd always say, "Let's go over 100 miles an hour, Dad." And he'd say, "Okay." And Mom would say, "No, no. Don't listen to that boy, Ted." She'd always tell him not to listen to me. But when he did listen to me, back in those days, you didn't seem to get tickets for going over 100, because he was always going over 100 in that. I think the fastest he took me in, it was like 120 or something. But, so I was just proudest punch of having that Golden Hawk. And our business went under, and we lost every penny that we had. And what we had to do is we had to move in with Gertrude and Stanley. Gertrude and Stanley had this little shack in the back of their house that fruit pickers lived in during the season, and that's all they had to put us up in, but they said, "You're welcome to it." So we moved in that. It was like a one room for all of us, pretty much. And it had outdoor bathroom and everything, And just a little run-down place. And it was really embarrassing when Sandy and I used to have to go to school. We didn't want anybody to know that we lived in that little shack. So what we would do for waiting for the bus, we'd go up to Gertrude and Stanley's house and wait in front of their house for the bus so it looked like we lived in their house, because we were kind of embarrassed to admit where we lived at that time. Bertie probably went through that type of stuff, too. So At that time, the friction between my mom and dad got kind of great, and he just took off out of nowhere and decided to go gold mining in Nicaragua. Well, he just took off, and we never saw him for quite some time, so we were completely on our own, penniless and on our own, and no food stamps, no welfare, no nothing, just a little bit of help from Gertrude and Stanley. And I picked fruit and worked for Stanley in his orchard, and my mom picked fruit, and by picking fruit, if it weren't for picking fruit, we probably wouldn't have survived. I spent about 6 years of my life picking fruit, so I am really familiar with the work that the illegal aliens do. And if it wasn't for us two picking fruit together, matter of fact, for her to buy a car, we went together and pooled our money to buy us a car. And but the benefit I had is when she wasn't using it, I got to use it, and I made full use of it being a young guy. But anyway, she got some, a little bit of money together, and she bought her house in Letha. And then after buying that house, it was kind of a rundown house. We fixed it up, and then she built a brand new house right next to it. And from that time on, she was always had enough money. Matter of fact, she always said to me, you know, since your dad left, my life has sure been a lot easier. Even though he never sent us any child support or nothing. But he come home, a year or two later, and they had this big fight, and that's when she decided to finally get a divorce. And I was upset at the time, but on hindsight, I can see it was the best thing for them to do, because after that, she began to change her life around, and she started going to church, and quit smoking and drinking, and cleaned up her life and become an angel from that point on. Well, she was always an angel. I'm going to read you a little poem I wrote before I'm dying. But probably tell you one more thing about those days was we used to go we worked together picking fruit. Probably about, 3-4 years. And I found it kind of embarrassing to have to work with my mother at the time. Everybody else just worked, all my friends worked with other friends, you know. And I was the one that was working with my mom. And when I look back, that she wasn't very good at climbing, picking the high branches. And so I always picked the high branches and give her the low branches. And when I look back, I don't know what she would have done without me helping her out and picking that fruit so that we could survive financially. So even though it was kind of agitating at the time and I got a lot of ribbing from my friends that I was always working with my mom, that I'm really proud that I was able to help her now in hindsight. It's funny how you look back, things that embarrass you when you're a kid, then when you look back, you think, well, I'm glad I did that. I'm glad I went through whatever I went through. But the thing was, is we did what we could to survive, and we did survive, and we survived well. Matter of fact, even in our worst circumstances, I would bring home my money that I made from picking fruit, and I would go buy, you know, really nice food like prawns and stuff and cook them up. And so I never did feel poor. No matter what we went through, I never felt poor, even though we went through some times that we would be classified as poor. Because my mom, in her mind, never felt poor. And she passed that on to us. And I'm really thankful for that. There's a lot more I could tell, but at a family reunion about 9 years ago, I wrote up a little thing I read that we were making a tribute to my mom back then. That was 9 years ago, because we thought that may be the last reunion she may attend. And here it is 9 years later. You know, and so she lived a lot longer than we thought she would. We kept thinking, well, this is probably the last get-together we're going to have where we're going to see her mom. And every year she fooled us and went one more year. You know, And so we had a special tribute then, and I wrote up a little memorial statement about her, a little memorial piece, and Sandy really liked it. And she said, you know, when Mama dies, I would like you to read that at her funeral. And so I read it over, and I thought, well, I think it can be improved a little bit. So I kind of made the basic idea of it into a kind of a freestyle poem here that I'll read to you as we close. It's called Angel Mother. It is written that God made man a little lower than the angels. But the scripture does not mention. Some women who we call our mothers show us the better angels of our nature and are themselves angels from on high. Our mother was such a person. And I know it would not offend God to speak from the heart, words that cannot be held back, and call her what she is, our angel mother. In this we join with that great soul, Abraham Lincoln, who saw an angel in his mother. I did not always see this angel in our mother. When I was a boy, I just saw her as my mother, a mother who walked where angels feared to tread, into many circumstances where we do not think angels reside. But still, the angel was there. And on reflection, I should have seen the angel among us. Yes, I should have perceived, for my eyes did see, a mother who taught me how to pray, that God is alive and always listens, a mother who is kind and always helped those in need, even when she was hurting herself, and asked for nothing in return. I saw a mother who lived in extreme circumstances and fought to rise above them. No matter what happened, she made her children feel secure, as if nothing were there to hurt or make afraid. When she was left on her own, she started with nothing and manifested everything. I saw a mother who was tolerant, patient, and accepting. No matter what any of us kids did, we knew we could tell our mother. She understood our weaknesses, yet had faith in our strengths. Her love for us was her only use of force. I saw a mother who was tried by fire, and the fire did not consume her. But the golden essence of her nature was refined and purified until the angel within was clearly revealed. As the years passed by, I saw the good seeds of her life sprout and grow until we no longer just see a mother, but an angel mother. Now she has left her body and returned home. God has one more angel to sit at his feet and make heaven complete. I made copies of this for anyone who wants one. Now some of the rest of the family is going to speak, and they'll speak about 5 to 7 minutes, something like that, apiece. And one person who's not on the program is my brother. He's a man of few public words, so you guys don't realize how honored we are that he has the gumption to get up and talk to us today. So introduce my brother, Bill.